Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest today is Joan Shekel, who over the past decade has worked as a writer, director, actor, consultant, and teacher. She's contributed to the development of over 434 films, more than half of which are completed or are still in the works. Joan is also known for her filmmaking labs throughout Hollywood and the international film world as the crucial force behind the most exciting films being made today. Very excited to have her on. And Carol, your students were raving about Joan's work in your intentional filmmaking class.
Oh, yes. Thank you. To them and to you.
Okay, Joan. They love your work. They say that what you're doing is sort of out of the box and very exciting. And so that's why we really thank you for being here. We want to get into your work and not to waste a minute. So would you start with telling us about your background and how you created these workshops for filmmakers?
Sure. And thank you again so much to both of you, Claire and Carol, for having me speak with you today. I feel like it's a privilege given your long history, and now we know in the same block.
Yes.
In Hollywood. My space is on Seward and Lexington, and Carol worked on Seward and Santa Monica, which is about a block away. Anyway, so that's good. We like the ladies making the legacy in Hollywood. So
right.
How did I get into all this? I started as an actress, and very young, when I was 3 or 4, I really understood, had a sort of an epiphany then, that stories connect us through feeling and meaning. You know, that was the way that we could connect, was through stories. And I just kind of really knew that that's what I would be doing with my life. So after many, many plays, close to 200 plays, I felt two things. I felt like what I wanted to do most always was to push form, you know, to do things that hadn't been done before. I didn't want to do revivals or rehashes. I wanted to be part of the tribe that would be pushing the boundaries on how we create live experience or filmed experience. And I wanted to do it with meaning. And so I felt at a certain point, I was doing a lot of work in postmodernism in New York, which was incredible. But at a certain point as a performer, I felt like, oh, you know, they're feeling... Everyone's laughing, they're crying, they're falling in love, but they were still asking, what does it mean? You know, what does it mean? What does it mean? And to be confronted literally by thousands of audience members asking that question, no matter how deeply they were emotionally moved, I finally had to ask that same question myself to say, well, you know, I have to get on with what things mean, and how to structure.
Hear that. I've seen some great plays, too. I walked in and really and enjoyed it. It took me through roller coasters of emotions. But then I'd have, my son was an actor, too, Joan, and I'd say to him, what's the story? What does that mean?
Exactly. What just happened? It's like having a really exciting conversation with somebody, and you feel you walk away feeling very titillated, but you confused.
Yes.
And it's so, you know, I really believe what Aristotle had to say about it. He said the function of theater is to entertain, and what we find most entertaining is seeing and grasping a truth. And that's true whether you're watching a TV commercial or you're doing, you know, a $200 million adventure epic. And we want to have a, I think of story structure at this point, like a roller coaster ride through a truth. My background is also as an opera singer. So I could notice that musical structure, we have so many different forms in musical structure. It goes everywhere from Beethoven to John Cage to Silence to Radiohead to the Beatles to madrigals. We have lots of different forms that we accept structurally in music that we just don't have at the moment in film or in episodic. So I felt at a certain point when I was acting, I became aware. I felt like the tools themselves were failing us. Every single scene is built on the idea of conflict. I want this, you want that, we fight. I want this, you want that, we fuck. I mean, that's basically it. Excuse me, I guess I can't say that on the radio. Should I say that again in another way?
No, we got it. That's important. It is one or the other, but it is all about creating stress in the scenes or energy, whichever word you want to put.
Well, I would think yes, energy is a wonderful word to use, rather than stress. I mean, I think that those two things are confused in our culture, and I think they're confused in our story structures as well. You know, tension does not mean anger. Tension does not mean conflict. Tension is a neutral property. Like, that's why we can build bridges with it. You know, tension, there's a tension right now between you and me of acute listening as we're trying to, you know, hear each other and respond to one another and, you know, create a dynamic that people who are listening can engage in too. There's a tension here, but it's not about us wanting different things and fighting over it, if that makes sense.
Yes, that's right.
So what I wanted to do, you know, after 200 plays, as an actress, I felt like I had worked with every master. I had made a list of 10 people that I thought were masters. And I went, found my way to each of them and said, I'll do anything. You know, I'll sweep floors, I'll get you coffee. I don't care. I just want to be around you and learn. And those people I ended up playing leading roles for in New York. And it was an incredible, you know, it was an incredible way to begin. And at a certain point, I felt like, you know, it's the tools themselves. It's the ideas of dramatic structure that are getting in our way of making meaningful work that connects us to each other and to our audiences. Because we all wanted to do the same thing. So what I wanted to do was to think about it for myself and to create a 21st century technique that could be relevant to the stories that I felt would come after the turn of the century. So I started this in 1996, and I gave up acting and just said, okay, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to think about this, because I looked around and was thought, wait a minute, somebody's going to have to think about this, and I have to stop struggling and hoping that somebody else would do it. I finally realized that, oh, that prompting from myself meant that it was within me to do it. So I might as well have a look. And so that's how, over time, I've developed what is now called the technique. I wanted to add to the legacy of Stanislavski, of Strasberg, you know, not putting myself on the same level, but to make the distinction that I don't work with an approach, I work with a technique that is non-conflict-based. It has its own set of exercises, its own set of rules, its own set of vocabulary. It's a standalone technique. And I use that both to make work myself as a writer, as a director, as a producer, and I also teach it. And that's what happens at the space that I have in Hollywood. And that's how these hundreds of films have been influenced or impacted or enlivened is through the engagement with the technique and the process of using it.
Fascinating. This is fascinating. All right. So this took a lot of courage, Joan, to give up acting after 200 plays. You had to be have everybody's name in your phone book. You must have had a phone book to die for. So to walk away from that took a lot of courage.
I remember my agent saying to me at the time, when I told her I was going to move to Chicago and think about things differently. And from New York, and I remember her just staring at me and saying, that's a lateral career move at best. And I didn't understand what she meant at the time because I never thought, well, that's not true. I did think in terms of career moves like everybody, but I had an image of success in my mind very young. I was like, I'm going to be in New York, and it's going to be a play. It's going to be written for me. I'm going to star. It's going to get a great review in the New York Times. Like, I had those checklists of what success was going to be. And it happened very young. It happened when I was 18. And I had thought it would take me till I was 35. I was like, okay, I'm going to go to school, and I'm going to learn, and I'm going to apprentice, I'm going to study, and then I'm going to make my way up through regionals. But it didn't happen like that. And so I feel very fortunate that when my own checkbox of what would make me my career or my success got ticked off so young, and I could stand there in the theater and realize, oh, I still am feel totally alone. My father is still dead. I still don't feel any closer to my mom, which I craved. I could realize at 18 that I was confusing success with reprieve from pain. And
wow.
So I feel really lucky that I was able to become conscious of that at that age and go, oh, no, well, if this is what I called success and I still feel so bad, then what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Because I thought that the success was going to take that away, success as I defined it. For myself, I thought that would mean release from pain. And so I quickly found out that that wasn't true. And I had to ask myself questions. Well, what is it then? What's going to make me really feel useful within myself and that I'm contributing in a way that has meaning to me? So I think it's from... I had already come to that place at 18. So when I stepped away from acting, it was to step more fully. I don't want to over-talk it, but does that make sense?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense. Because I will say to you, I ran a business for 33 years and I sold it. And everyone said, wow, what a great career you've had. And I said, no. That's not what I came here for, but I don't know what it is I'm supposed to do, but that wasn't it.
Yeah. No, I did know. I feel very, very lucky, and it's one of the reasons that I teach, because I never, I had extreme challenges, as everybody does, but this particular one of knowing what I wanted to do and being able to connect to it at a core level, that hasn't been my source of confusion.
Well, that's lovely to know early on. And how talented you are.
Lucky,
it's amazing that you did all the acting, all the stage work. So let's get more into what happens in your class, because Sundance got involved with your workshop early on. I mean, that is an incredible achievement.
Well, it was... surprise. I mean, I think that, I mean, thank you. I don't, as I said, once this got detonated for me at 18 about achievement, I've pretty much ever since then just thought, well, you know, just get up every day and do the thing that's most interesting to you, to me. And that's going to have to be that. You know, that's what, that's basically your compass and your north. So, yeah, I had, what happened was, is that I knew that I wanted to start to come up with my own tools, with my own technique, and to start making work through this experimentation and this exploration. And I had another huge stroke of luck through a good friend of mine, Marianne Marino. And at that time, she was working with Tim Burton, and they were working over at The Lot. It's now called The Lot, but it's the, do you know the sound stages over on Formosa?
Yes, yeah. Right.
So she was over there. They had all the sound stages at over there. And so one day I was like, you know, I really want to, like, just play around some Shakespeare tonight. Do you think I could come over to your office? Because I had this teensy apartment. I couldn't fit anybody in it. So she was like, sure. She was like, why don't you ask the head of production if you could have one of the sound stages? So I walked over. I was like, hey, I want to play around a little bit. What do you think if we went over there for a couple of hours? And he was incredibly generous and kind. He said, sure, why not? I mean, I didn't have insurance. I had nothing. And that one night turned into 10 months. So I had all 8 sound stages for free, 24/7.
How on earth did that happen? He let you have the stages? Were you renting them out?
They were going to start the next day. They thought, okay, well, tomorrow they're going to come back in and be shooting. So we never thought, and he never thought, Marianne never thought, none of us thought it was going to last more than a day. But then the next day it was like, nope, we're still on hold, we're still working on the script. So I was like, cool, I'm going to come back. And then the third day, and then the fourth day, and then the head of production there just said, look, you know, I'll just tell you, I'll just call you when we're coming back on. So I just literally dropped to my knees in the middle of the sound stage and said, I will be worthy of this gift. I will give it back. You know, I pretty much moved in. I really didn't move out of there and worked with actors. I did a production of Miss Julie on 35,000 square feet in the original soundstage that Pickford and Chaplin built. I mean, it was incredible.
Wow.
So, yeah, I just a massive gift. I mean, at this point, I had no money. I mean, I had left a thriving career, and I was hiding from my landlord. I mean, I had nothing at all. I didn't have a job. So at the moment, I mean, I PA'd. I was like, I don't want to act. I want to focus on this. So it was a true, you know, I didn't mistake it. I'd already made so much work that I knew what to do with an empty space. And that's how the technique was really born, because I got to be in there 24/7 with this whoever would come over and try things out. And so while I was doing that, directors would come, or people who were making work would come, and they would watch, and they would see the performance, and they would see the blocking, and they would see what I was doing, and they'd say, well, how are you doing that? That's very interesting to us. How are you doing that? And so by starting to talk about what I was doing, how I was getting that performance, through what methodology, that's really how I came to do the work of articulating and honing the craft itself, because other people were asking me, how are you doing that? So it forced me, because I wanted to share it, you know, I'm an artist. I only did this because I wanted the work to get easier to do with people. I didn't ever thought I was going to be a teacher as well. But
that's you did become a teacher. So now there's just so much to know and learn. So you, how did you get Sundance involved? Did they hear about it, or
yeah,
did
they
send
right? Right. Sorry, I didn't mean to circle away. So during that time,
yeah.
I don't know exactly who it was. It may have been through the producer Lori Parker, or through my friend Allison McLean, who directed a film called Jesus Son. She also made Crush, but you know, someone mentioned to Michelle Satter that I was doing this, that I was starting to do classes over, you know, or do open rehearsals and workshops at the space, and it was helping directors to figure out their films, to work better with actors. That's kind of what the focus was at the time. And so Michelle called me, and she was like, well, we want to send some people over there. So that was incredible. I mean, it really, she's amazing. And Michelle Satter, who's the head of the Film Noun program at Sundance, you know, that woman has a lot of vision. And she has a deep cultural perspective. And so she heard that the work was helping, and so she was, I thank her pretty much every day for.
Oh, nice.
What?
That is nice. I just think it's like you took a leap off a cliff, not knowing how you would land, and then all these magical things happened. I know you can't pay your rent, but you have sound stages to work in, and you're doing what you really wanted to do.
Achievement. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of talk in our culture about risk. And I know that, you know, I want to say to those who are listening, you know, risk does not come without abject terror and utter confusion. And, you know, it's not like you take a leap and then there's just like magic fairy bubbles. You know, you take a leap into your own fear and confusion. And that's where, I suppose that's where relationship is possible. Because you're no longer saying, well, I have to wait until I feel doubt-free. I have to wait until I feel ready. Instead, you know, which is sort of trying to fragment yourself rather than be in relationship to the fact that I'm terrified, I'm miserable, I'm totally confused, I don't know what to do. Okay, this is a good time to leave one thriving career and go after something else. I just want to communicate that I didn't feel at the time, and I don't now, I don't the same. I feel pretty much it's like being on a tightrope, and my own mantra to myself is don't look down.
Well, I just want
to look inward,
mm-hmm.
You know, connect deeply to yourself, to your feet, to the wire, to the act. Don't get distracted, don't look down. And to do that, you have to be really work hard at presence. And that means a tremendous amount of fear. So that's why there's dragons protecting the grail in all those stories. The grail is the self. And the dragon is our terror of ever knowing who we are. So if you want to take a risk, don't make it a prerequisite that anything is going to good is going to come of it, because then you're already working again for a result, and you don't know what it's going to be. I don't know. I'd wake up every day and say, "Okay, I don't know what to do, but I know I don't want to act because I don't want to say other people's words. I mean, at that point, I didn't think I had anything to say. Now listen to me in an interview. I can't stop talking.
Let me just tell everyone. You are having the technique will be in Los Angeles from the 5th through the 7th of December. It's coming up. And
yes, weekend.
All right. Now, let me just read this. It says, producing the technique will take your career to the next level. In one essential craft-packed weekend, you will deepen your understanding of nugget, action, and beats. Build a structural motor to power your craft and your content. Connect to the feeling, structure, and meaning of your film, and bring your work unforgettably to life. That is extraordinary information. So can you just give us something to understand? What is the nugget, action, and beats? Is that part of the production and the play or the film?
Yes, it's a great question. I think of the nugget as the motor of the project. It's the soul, if you want, but it's the motor. It's got moving parts. It's how you make the theme actionable. So, in other words, nugget, that's a term of the technique, nugget. It pertains to the idea of theme. I don't use the word theme always because I was taught it poorly, like a lot of people were at a certain, you know, whatever, when I was 10 or whatnot. And it was taught to me as a kind of a cerebral concept or a metaphor or a versus. It's this versus that. I just never could understand, like we were talking earlier, what is the meaning? What is it about? How is that not an intellectual experience, but a visceral experience, which is what plays and entertainment and TV shows have to do. That's what they have to do. That's what the story is. So the nugget is the actionable soul of the movie or the theme. Theme actually means to put or to do. That's the etymology of the word theme.
Wow, I didn't realize that. To put or to do.
Exactly, baby. Yep.
Wow.
And so what we've done, what I noticed, and I particularly noticed it because I came up in postmodernism, the theme was an idea, but the play never had to have anything except coincidentally to do with that idea. And it was very, very interesting and wonderful exploration, but it was leaving us with the question, well, what does it mean? Okay, meaninglessness is its own thing. Now, when I'm talking about meaning, I want to be very clear that I'm not talking about a definition. I'm talking about an invitation, a diving board into a mystery. So, at any rate, we've separated the ideas of plot and theme. We're like, okay, well, we have this idea of what we want the story to be about, and then we're going to come up with some ideas. And ne'er the twain shall meet until people are reading it or you're doing it and they say, well, we don't understand it. And then everybody adds a scene at the end of the movie or the show that kind of explains what happened. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, I call it the dad plus hug equals cry scene. Where they get together and they talk about what happened and they hug and they cry and then the movie ends. It's not enough. You know, the structure has to be the roller coaster ride through the truth. So the first thing to do is to think about the theme, the nugget, in simple, direct, active language. An example would be for Little Miss Sunshine. The nugget on that was, this is a film about our need to win.
Yes.
So in that case, each word is something, number one, that you can do, and number two, that actually happens in the plot. So our, you know, our, it's about a family. It was very, very important to John and Val Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, the directors. They wanted to talk about family. So our need, you know, I wanted to talk about our insatiable needs to know ourselves, but to still stay connected to the people that we love. Need. Two, you know, they're going to the pageant and win. Obviously, the whole thing is about a competition. And at the end of the film, what they end up winning is our. You know, they win the family, if that makes sense. So
yes.
When you're thinking about theme, when you're thinking about theme, you need to think about it in terms of what actually happens in the plot, as opposed to some cool idea that would sound good on the poster. You have to think about plot and theme in together as one. That's the nugget. So inside of every theme, the structure is already embedded. So I can give you an example if that's helpful.
Yes, please.
Okay. So you pick a relationship. Any kind of relationship will do.
Okay, mother-daughter.
Okay, mother-daughter. And then pick a feeling. What kind of mother-daughter? A feeling between them.
A feeling of, let's do respect.
Okay, a respectful mother and daughter. And then I have to say to you, awesome. Like, has that movie ever been made? I would say go for it immediately because you won't have any competition. I do think that those stories that have to do with love and connection, they are the stories of the 21st century. It's why I started working on the technique in 96. And it's why when Whale Rider came to me in 2000, I was like, fine, I got it. I got it. I'll work on it for free. I know what to do. It's a story of a little girl coming into her spiritual leadership. It's not about the father losing power. It's about a young girl coming into her spiritual awakening. So, at any rate, 21st century stories, it's not all about destruction. So a respectful mother and daughter. So then I'd say to you, okay, if you wanted to tell the story about a respectful mother and daughter, what's one thing that happens between mothers and daughters who respect each other? Give me an action.
That happens.
Let me put it differently.
Yeah.
What's one thing that a respectful mother and daughter do with one another? What's a verb, an action verb?
They're always expanding each other.
Okay. So they're expanding each other. So in order to expand each other, what might they do? What might the mother do with the daughter or the daughter?
Showing the daughter how to expand or grow beyond her own limited feelings or thoughts at the moment. And the daughter also does the same for the mother.
Exactly.
Who would need is to locked in to old ways, but the daughter sees the true possibilities without...
If we just hold you now here in terms of the work, I would stop you right with the verb and say, okay, awesome. The mother shows the daughter how to think and what to do beyond her possibilities, and the daughter does the same for the mother.
Right.
Okay, so already you can see how that becomes a story. It's a great story. You can already start to imagine situations in which those actions could thrive. Do you see what I mean? So you have two people, you imagine a mother and daughter, and what they're doing is showing each other and doing things that are beyond their expectations of what they were capable of. So right away, you could set them in an adventure, you could set them into a challenge at home, you could set them wherever your creativity inspires you to set them. What's important is the action verb and how it relates to the nugget, to the meaning. I want to talk, i.e., I want to talk about a respectful mother and daughter. So that's one action that would happen. Pick another one. What's another thing that happens between respectful mothers and daughters?
tremendous growth, but growth through support. And
I would hold right there, and I'd go, those are the two verbs. They support one another, uh-huh. and they grow. Now you have three action verbs. They show and do things that expand their boundaries. So
right.
they don't just talk about them, they do them. They support one another as action verb number two, and they grow number three. That gives you an outcome in this case. There you go. That's it. That's a motive for a plot. So then you go in reverse and say, if you saw a play or you read a story that was supposed to be about a respectful mother-daughter and they never helped each other grow, would you buy it? Would you think that they actually respected each other?
No.
No, exactly. It's that easy. It's that quick. No, you would not. And then imagine that you saw, you know, the poster said, this is about a respectful mother-daughter, but they never actually showed each other or did anything that pushed them past out of their comfort zone and into a new part of themselves. Would you buy it as respect, or would it seem more like being dutiful?
Right. I don't know, but I would not find that an interesting film, because when I go to films, I want to walk out of there feeling better than I did when I went in.
And in your case, the thing that makes you feel better is to think about relationships in terms of respect. Now,
yes.
Then you have to break down into action verbs what respect is. In your case, you're saying it's to push each other and to support each other in growth. That's
right. Yes,
and
that's
so
right.
Therefore, if you saw a movie in which that never happened,
uh-huh.
would you buy it as a movie about a respectful mother and daughter?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, in meaning that, I don't want to confuse you, but I do think it's helpful to hear somebody working through an example, because you have to then picture the movie. You have to picture it. You say, okay, I think I'm walking into a theater to see a movie about a respectful mother and daughter, but they don't support each other at all through the whole film. So is it a movie about a respectful mother and daughter? Yes or no?
Right. That's the question many times you come out with.
That's the question you come out with. So now I'm speaking to you as about if you're writing something, if your readers are writing something, you don't want the audience to come out with that question. You want them to come out feeling like, wow, that's what it takes to respect somebody. I want to go home. I want to bring my mom back and see this. And
right.
I want to support her in... expanding her sense of self, if she can allow me. But because I want her to grow, I'm going to have to listen to her. I'm going to support her. I'm going to think about who she is with her, and vice versa. These are actions that must happen in the plot. So when you're structuring something, that's what I mean about nugget action, nugget in action. They have the movie, the structure has to not just talk the talk, like, oh, it's about a respectful mother and daughter. It has to walk the walk. I need to see how that's done through actions, such as expanding each other's possibilities, supporting one another, and growing. Those actions have to be there. And what's happening right now when we're structuring things, because we're so ham-fisted by this idea of oppositional wants, there's no way to structure a story about a respectful mother and daughter that's only about fighting and fucking. You're not going to be able to do it. And so those stories aren't getting told. So the workshop, just like I'm doing with you on the phone, centers on the part of the technique that, number one, invites you to rethink paradigms of conflict and to instead to think about structuring in terms of contrast, contrasting actions rather than conflicting actions. So it's an invitation to rethink, and then, you know, if you if it floats your boat, then I'm going to give you tools to be able to address it, meaning giving you the definition of nugget / theme, doing exercises that help you to get into what your theme is in a visceral way, not a sloganeering, esoteric or intellectual way. And then the actions are the way you structure it so that it walks the walk, doesn't just talk the talk. So I'll, you know, in the technique, I have come to my own definition of action, which has taken 18 solid years of work. But I break it down in the lab so that you can walk away and use it that day. I don't want you to wait. I don't want anybody to be sitting there grilling at the computer going, there's so many choices. What do I do? What do I do? There's really not, if you think about it in these terms. Respectful mothers and daughters actually do things. It really happens. And if that's within you to write, then you've got to write that down.
This is brilliant. So do you work with the people in the lab like that? You take someone and help them get clarity on what to write for the script and get into the characters that close?
Yeah, well, I get into the nugget. You know, you get into the, you know, it's, the technique has 34 levels, let's say, not levels in terms of progression, but in terms of aspects, nugget, world, character, relationship, overall actions, supporting action, beats, which are the chunks of the scene that deliver on the actions, which is something that Jill Soloway, who has created Transparent, I don't know if you know that show.
No,
I don't. It's on Amazon right now. It's sort of the hit of the season. She studied with me and made a huge transformation into the release of her own story. She really gets action and beats. And, you know, it shows. And that show is a huge hit. So I just want to say to people, you know, the hard thing is to connect to yourself, to what you really feel, and to what meaning that has, and to articulate it. That part can be tough because we're not brought up in a culture that encourages us to do that. But, okay, whatever. That's hard. If you're an artist, that's just what it is. It's an occupational hazard of being an artist, is that you have to connect to yourself. What do you need to do? It's not going to change. So you have to do that anyway. And then the rest is approach. The rest is tools. The rest is saying, how do I structure this so people can get it? And you it doesn't have to be... I mean, it's hard because it takes a lot of effort every single day, but so does doing nothing. So I like I like to share the things. I didn't go to school to study this technique. I went to school, studied other techniques, but what I'm teaching, what I've come to, is a product of acting in 200 plays. And collaborating on for upwards of 400 films. You know, this is from working. The technique is from actually working, doing the work every day. It doesn't happen in an academic setting. This is from the trenches, as they say.
Right.
So, and, you know, you have to get the movie on its feet or the TV show up on its feet. It's got to be embodied by people. It's got to be built. It's got to be shot. It's an incredibly physical act. So that's the other aspect of the technique, is that there's a physicality so that these ideas and concepts that we're talking today don't remain cerebral. You get up and you do them so that by the time you walk away, you've had a direct felt experience of something that may be useful to you. Maybe it won't be, but you know, maybe it will. If it is, good. If it's not, oh well. You know, it's okay too. But it has proved to be very supportive, you know, to films like Well Rider, A Little Miss Sunshine, TV shows like Transparent, films like Beginners, Miranda July's The Future, Rupert Sanders, Snow White and the Huntsman, and there are many, many, Arbitrage, and many, many, many examples.
Right. Well,
everyone's
let me...
different. They're all different genres as well. It's not a cookie cutter. It's not enforcing a genre. It's saying these are tools to help you think about your own meaning and the actions that can deliver them in a simple, gettable, visceral, felt way that has meaning to you and perhaps then to other people.
Right. Well, I want to go to a statement that you have made a couple of times to understand it. It's called the consciousness of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You want to find the consciousness of the story. So can you just talk on that for a minute?
Sure. Well, a story is the inner life moving outward. That's what a story is. So you have an inner life. Everybody has an inner life. We may or may not be aware that we have inner lives, but nevertheless, we have them. And if you're not sure what I mean, if you're listening and not sure what I mean, all you have to do is fall silent for 5 seconds. And the inner life is whatever happens during that silence. The inner life is a realm. You know, it's a realm within, who knows where it is. We don't know. But whatever. Human beings have inner lives. Everything is not all external. We have inner lives. And our inner lives crave to be shared. It's why you can stand next to the person that you love the most and just feel like, oh, God, how badly you want to be understood by them, to share what's inside of you. That craving is innate. It is what makes us human. You can't get rid of it. It's true for everybody. Stories and the need for story are innate. It belongs to human, every human being. So that's the inner life, okay? But the inner life is happening inside. You can't see it. You can't touch it. It doesn't speak in English or Portuguese or any other language. It speaks in silences and songs and breath and gestures. And it has its own language that we need to become conscious to. Becoming conscious. So when you first write a story, you don't think about it too much, right? I mean, you just write it down. Write as fast as you can and just get it out. Just get the baby out. It doesn't matter. Good, bad, indifferent. Let it be terrible. Like, let it be as bad as it can be, but let it be. And then once you have something written, then you can go back and look at it and listen to it as attentively as you would your own baby. And then you'll start to notice, huh, seems to be from this action, it wants to talk about this, or maybe it wants to talk about this. And you'll become conscious of the meaning that's inherent in what you've written. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Typically, what we think we've written is one thing. What's actually on the page is something else. What the director wants it to be is something else. What the producer wants it to be is something else. Then what the stars want is something else. And what the financiers want is something else. And then the marketers make it something else. And then the critics say something else. And then people don't know what to think. And they don't go. So these are the ways that a movie can pull apart. I don't think in terms, I think the whole technique is based on coherence so that there can be one language for people to think about the core of the story. the meaning, the consciousness. But you have to sort of, because it comes from the inner life, you have to do some work to become conscious to what you've written. You know, you can't just take it as, I mean, you don't know what it is. Writing is a way of understanding. If you understood it, you wouldn't want to write it. Why would you write it? You already know it. Writing is a way of entering some mysterious thing that you crave to bring out of yourself. And then once you do, that's when you go back and you look at it and you find the nugget and you clean up the structure and you get the motor to start to turn over. This is a great example of this. Well, I'll pause before I give that example. Would you like the example, or shall I pause for a moment?
I want to hear the example, but I have to say to you that I live in Oxnard, and I'm looking out at the ocean, and three dolphins just jumped out of the water when you were talking about the state of consciousness. So whatever you're saying, it affected them, because I seldom see them jump out of the water. I know they're out there often, but there's something special in what you're talking about.
Well, it's very moving that you tell me this, because there have been many times in my life where extraordinary, special things have happened. And always at that moment, three dolphins jump out of the water. I've seen it five or six times.
I have.
So, but only in a moment when something very real, you know. So that's special that has happened right now between us, yeah.
Oh, yeah, give us an example. We're all tuned in. You're making us think. We're starting to feel. We're starting to grow. So please continue.
Yes, and so when you start to think and you start to grow and you put it into action,
mm-hmm.
right? That's basically the motor, just to use that, to build on that beautiful articulation you just gave. Thinking and growing is good, and then you embody it through action. Otherwise, the thinking will remain intellectual. The action is frozen, and so growth can't occur. So that's just something to think about when, for your readers, when you're writing. Have a thought and then put it into action verbs. So if your thought is about, oh gosh, it's delicious to grow, then you'd ask yourself, well, what actions does it take for me to grow? So that it doesn't remain intellectual, so that you can think about growth in actionable beats. I have to engage in with teachers. I have to listen. I have to get up and try it out. I have to fall apart. I have to work on it again. I have to look at it from another angle. I mean, these are the actions of growth. And if you wanted to structure a story about growth, they would need to be there. Because it's that practical. That practical. It takes a lot of work. Obviously, I've been doing this since I was three. I haven't done anything else since I was three. So, you know, I know easier said than done, but at essence, at root, it's not that complicated. It's just like being a good friend. You have to show up. You know, you have to do it. You can't just say you are. You have to actually do something. And a story and writing is no different. So sometimes when you look at whatever you've written, I want to teach tools so that you can become aware if there's a discrepancy between what you thought it was going to be and what it actually is. There's always a big gap, if you know what I mean. And usually we don't want to see that gap. We don't want to look at it, because that might mean, like, you have to start again. I mean, and a lot of that, you asked me in the email, what's the mistake that beginning filmmakers make? That's the mistake that they make. Right?
Make that clear again, because I read a lot of short films and scripts and things for people, and I talk to them, and what they tell me the film is about and what I just read have no bearing on each other.
Yes.
You know, I didn't It wasn't there. Oh, no. But it's supposed to be there. You'll feel it in the film. I don't think so.
But that's happening because the relationship between meaning, it's happening for two reasons, Carol. It's happening, or my own thoughts about why it's happening, based on my investigation of these hundreds and hundreds of works that I've done, is there's a discrepancy. You know, the discrepancy arises from the fact that we have divorced the meaning from the action. We've done it culturally. We do it in every single way. So there's no way to perceive that actions mean anything. We know the slogan, action means, you know, is louder than words, but we don't even see each other. Like, we're doing everything through screens. So what impact? It's an attrition. So I think it's very hard for writers to actually be able to spot the problem, because the problem is so pervasive in our culture. So, you know, you have to reclaim. You know, most of the technique is based on reclaiming, a reclaiming of meaning, a reclaiming of feeling, a reclaiming of action, a reclaiming of embodiment, and a reclaiming of coming out and saying what you want to say and feeling what it's like when somebody actually listens, being able to feel that, and reclaiming what it is to be in front of somebody and be able to feel when you're boring them to tears. You know, as an actress, I feel that I had a great, great privilege in that we were doing new work, and I was doing it in New York City, and when people were bored, they left. It's New York. They're going to stay. So I had the great benefit of having people, and I was playing the lead, and they would walk out by the thousands. I mean, just in droves, Carol. So I don't mind. Like, I have respect for that. If the play is not holding somebody's interest, why should they stay?
Exactly.
So anyway, okay, so this is a reclamation. So part of this is what one needs to embark upon if you want to be able to catch the discrepancy that you speak of, that you're reading it, somebody says, well, this is what it's about, and you're like, I don't think so. It's because we don't even know how to look for action. So you have to reclaim what action is in order to be able to see it. And then you can notice, it's like having a boyfriend that says, I love you, but he's never there. At some point you're going to notice, wait a minute, there's a difference between saying you love somebody and actually showing up for them. With the script, it's the same. You have to be able to spot it in the same way. So, but because we don't have that tool, the tool of action, in clear, I call it Buffy's immovable wall, but that's another story. I mean, there's just no way around this one. We are always wanting to get around it, but you cannot get around it. And you can get around it. You can even get a maid, but it will fail. It won't perform as well. So, you know. So the example was, I was working with Jill Soloway, who created Amazon's first real game-changing hit. I mean, it's a wonderful show. And so she came to my lab. She was not yet a director. She was a writer. She was a writer for like Six Feet Under and The United States of Tara. I mean, wonderful, wonderful writer. And she came to me and she said, I want to punch above my weight. You know, I feel that I could be a director, but I'm just not, I can't get in the ring, and I'm not working hard enough to punch above my weight. So I said, okay, come and we'll do some training. And it was very, very, very difficult for her in the beginning. Every day she was like, no way. This is not going to be good. But at some point, she was able to recognize that the script that she had brought to the lab was not doing what she said it was doing. She was able to spot what you brought up earlier. She wanted to write about something, but what was on the page was totally different. And she had the guts at that point to say, I'm throwing it out.
Wow.
Yeah. She just threw it out. She was like, nope, okay, I get it. It's not walking the walk. And it's also not speaking from who I am, from myself as source, which is really the essence of the technique, the self as source. So she went back right away. She wrote a short. It got into Sundance. She immediately wrote a feature, Afternoon Delight, which I worked with her on and rehearsed, and also the DP, Jim Frohna, who's amazing, that within a year she had written that film and it won Best Director at Sundance. I believe she was the first woman to win that prize at Sundance. And then immediately thereafter, she began to write Transparent, which is based on her own life story. Her father came out as transgender at 72 years old. So it's about her and her family trying to contend with identity. And, you know, we say we love each other, mm-hmm. but what does that really mean? Who do we want each other to be? The nugget on that show is the central question is, will you love me if I ... So Jill and I worked very hard together on that show with the cast, with the DP, with the directors. And I just think she's a great example, you know, from the way that she came saying, I want to punch above my weight, really struggled with the tools and with rethinking and coming out of her box and connecting to herself as source. You know, and then within a year to win Best Director at Sundance. I mean, formidable. And it really, the key two big releasers for her was work that we do in the labs to really connect to self as source. Not to tell somebody else's story, but to tell yours from your inner life, not from your ideas. And the actions, the idea of action verbs, and how to structure so action verbs don't happen occasionally, but they happen on every page, within every beat.
We have just a moment left, so
People can find you. I didn't even give your website.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. I've been absolutely mesmerized. It's Joan, Joan, SCHECKEL.com. JoanSchekel.com. And it will be on Lexington in Hollywood. That is 660, what was it?
It's, shall I just give, the website is www.joanschekel.com, and the address is 6608 Lexington,
mm-hmm.
is right in the middle of Hollywood. If you go to the site, it will tell you everything that you need to know, and it will give you map links to the space, and there's also a contact so that you can contact us directly and get more information about the workshop, the technique itself, and if you'd like to participate in any way or hear more about what we've been speaking to.
Great. Well, we sincerely thank you. I know that my classes, all of the students and the people who are really need this information will come up with questions and be after me that I didn't ask you things. So I hope you will agree to come back in a few months and talk to us again.
Well, I would be very honored to, and I really thank you for the time and the care and the opportunity to start to speak to the technique, because I do really feel strongly that it's time for me to share the tools. And right now you can only find me through word of mouth. You know, somebody who took the lab, you know, it's been sort of a hard to find me. But now that I have a space, the doors are open, and I would love to see you there, too.
Thank you so much. Well, don't worry. From the heart, we'll start promoting you and your events because we really honor you for the work you've done. And the whole intent is so obvious that it's to improve artists, to help them find their inner core and to expand beyond their weight, just like Jill said. That's great.
Exactly. Because we are the culture makers. So that's what I'm interested in, is the
way.
Okay,
well, lady, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much, Joan. And I too, am looking forward to you returning.
Okay. Well, thank you so much again, and thank you for your wonderful questions and for having this time together. I really appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Take
good luck
care,
to
everyone.
You.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Productions. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.